When we were deciding in which order we would hyphenate our daughter's two family names, Ng and Demers, there was never any serious debate about which way we'd go. My wife is a researcher, coming from a world where the name of an article's primary author always goes first, and though I'm hoping to have evened things out somewhat by the time our kiddo hits the age of majority, at the moment when her little clay-gray face came writhing into the world, there was no question whatsoever as to whom her primary human author was. But beyond the question of proper credits, there were also aesthetic considerations. The sequence, Demers-Ng, sounds like a verb, a neologistic activity of some kind. Demersing. Hey, what's Charlie doing? Oh, the usual. Eating a whole box of Triscuits, failing to live up to his potential. You know, Demersing. She is, therefore, Josephine Ng Demers, which sounds great, but also isn't perfect, technically, because in Cantonese, the prefix ing is a negation, meaning that, in a way, her name is Josephine, not Demers. Demers is a name that, though francophone, is not French, but uniquely Quebecois. Everyone who wears the name is related, at some point, to one of three brothers, Jean, Étienne, and André Dumais, who arrived in Algonquian territories from Normandy in the late 1640s, and changed their family honorific to de mer, meaning from the sea, or of the sea, to pay tribute to their epic voyage. Because we came by way of the sea. And the new neighbors were like, cool, is that also what you've got lined up for the return trip, or... My dad, the bearer of this name, has lived two-thirds of his life so far at the edges of oceans, but only because he left Quebec, first for the West Coast, then for the East. When I flew from Vancouver to Halifax in the spring of 2013, the day after finding out my wife was pregnant, I promised her I wouldn't say anything yet about the new baby-to-be. But 24 hours after arriving, staring out into the North Atlantic off Peggy's Cove, crashing like a pearl-gray symphony, I lasted about 8 seconds. Kara's pregnant, I told my father. Daniel David Joseph Demers. Joseph, meaning, in Hebrew, he may add, or simply, God increases. But it was only a few weeks ago that I realized that with every loan word of her first and last names translated into English, my daughter's adjusted patronymic sounds like the title of some young earth creationist's anti-Darwinian manifesto. God increases, not from the sea. In late November 1878, just before Advent, a man who, by chance, shares my name, Charles Darwin, wrote a letter to the Guardian newspaper, which he asked not to be published, because it was his policy not to publicly reply to criticisms from non-scientists. The Guardian had asked Darwin to respond to their reprinting of a very, very long sermon by a Church of England cleric named Edward Bouverie Pusey, attacking Darwinism. That Pusey's sermon contains so many of today's most threadbare cliches from the fundamentalism versus scientism culture wars. How do you explain the eye? If natural selection is real, why are there still monkeys and kangaroos? Is all the more bizarre given that Pusey starts off sounding like Stephen Jay Gould, arguing that, quote, the basis of a lasting peace and alliance between physical science and theology is that neither should intrude into the province of the other, end quote. And referring to the language of the book of Genesis as, quote, in part, obviously metaphoric, end quote. According to Wikipedia, Pusey's main contribution as professor of Hebrew at Oxford University was his commentary on the Minor Prophets, which included his writings on Jonah. In that commentary, Pusey seems to back away from the invitation to metaphor, insisting not only that the events in the story transpired, but that they were recorded by Jonah himself. The professor even argues, at one point, that it is unmanly to assume that because the book is written in the third person, that it could not have been written by the eponymous prophet. The narrative mode of the book, apparently presenting to some a bigger stumbling block for the realist reportage theory than the whole 3 days inside a fish who knew the way to Nineveh thing. Pusey is also certain that the Jonah in this book is the same one referred to in Kings because of the uniqueness of his name, which means dove. Later on in his commentary, Pusey notes the author's use of language from the Psalms. So, for him, literally the prophet Jonah, quoting literally King David, crying to God for safety, for rescue from the water. But in other Psalms, God is the water, as in Psalm 42. As the deer longs for flowing streams, so my soul longs for you, O God. Analogies, similes, and symbols are some of humanity's supplest, most adaptable, but most primordial forms of naming. A quick Google search will show that from the most sophisticated theologians all the way to the online meme factories of Instagram, the aquatic in general and the ocean in particular are irresistible metaphors for God. And not surprisingly, the ocean is the most vast, powerful, literally unfathomable, and overwhelming entity with which we can, nevertheless, have a tangible, sensual, and sensible relationship. And it is the fount of life. Turn the lamp on over an aquarium for a few days. Watch the algae bloom, and you'll see why the Genesis story begins with water and light. We know water in three forms, each of which has different names, but none of which alter the fundamental nature of the substance. And though we come into the world when the water breaks, we can't ever be separated from it. Even when we're lying unprotected, fully exposed to the glare of the sun, even parched with thirst by an eastern wind, we too, whatever our names, are still mostly water ourselves.